Our first reading today is from Psalm. God sets the lonely in families. The second reading is from Proverbs. Train up a child in the way he or she should go, and when they are old, they will not depart from it. The last reading is from Matthew. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased." The word of God for the people of God.
Well, a word of welcome to those joining us by internet right now. A group on the Italy trip is not back yet. They took an extension. We may have folks watching from Capri right now, and we bid them well on their trip home. Others who are joining us, we're glad you're a part of our service today, and of course for everyone gathered here. I know it can be a bit annoying for somebody to return from a big trip and then tell you about a trip you didn't get to take. So that having been said, let me tell you about my trip with the choir to Italy the last couple of weeks. We really had a splendid time. You would be so very proud to have been in the different venues and heard our choir sing and the acoustics and some of the great basilicas. It just made the music a whole different experience. I have some pictures. This first one is the choir singing at their opening concert in the St. Ignatius Church in Rome. Just a splendid sanctuary in that room, awe-inspiring. This next one is in the lower basilica of the Franciscan Church in the village of Assisi, where St. Francis lived. In fact, St. Francis buried just a few yards from where the choir is singing. This picture comes at a little bit of a cost. I was reprimanded by a monk for taking this picture during a mass. And I do not understand any Italian, but I understood every word he told me that day for taking that picture. And then we got to see the new Pope in St. Peter's Square with 100,000 of his other closest friends and relatives. But that was a very, very neat experience. One more picture. Here's Susan with an Italian waiter. And you can tell she's enjoying that moment just a little too much, can't you tell? I had some pictures in my Friday email this past week. And I know the choir is going to be distributing other photos, but they represented St. Luke's and Indiana so very well. Right before leaving, Governor Pence declared our choir cultural ambassadors for the state of Indiana, and they represented us in a great, great way. So we're glad to be back. I know that they are, and it's good to be with you. 2 weeks ago today, as I was walking this very hour, walking the streets of Rome, sort of taking in the age of those streets and some of the ruins I was walking on, I just started thinking, what was the church like during the time some of those streets and buildings were built? What was it like to be a Christian back in that time? And I remembered some of my church history. And I recalled that one of the earliest missions of Christian communities was to adopt abandoned children. In ancient Rome and Greek societies, unwanted children would just be left on the streets. It was illegal to do that. In the Roman Forum next to the Colosseum, people would just leave their children if they didn't want them, especially young girls. They would abandon them. And so the church would go and gather these children that had been left and say, we're going to take care of them. That's why infant baptism became so popular. The church would baptize these children as a way of saying they are adopted into God's family, and the church would take a vow that they are now our responsibility. They are now our children. That's why when we do children baptisms, the congregation has a vow, not just the parents, because the congregation says we are now the family of this child as well. In some early churches and monasteries, they would literally build into the building what is called baby hatches, little openings like this picture you see in a doorway, where people would open the door, place the baby, and ring a bell to let someone on the inside know that a child had been placed there They would take the child and care for it. Well, children aren't abandoned like that on the street. It's not legal, at least. Churches don't build baby hatches into their buildings anymore. But are we not still called to rescue children? Children are as much at risk today as they were then. Children are at risk to violence. Children are at risk to abduction, as we saw just a week ago in Cleveland, not Cambodia. Cleveland. Children are at risk to hopelessness. The third leading cause of death for American teenagers is suicide. Our world still needs communities of faith who look at all of the children around them and says, there are children. We're going to take responsibility. We're going to adopt them. We're going to nurture them in love and faith and growth. That's what I want to talk about this Mother's Day. You know, Mother's Day is a challenging day for preachers, for people who come with great memories of Thanksgiving. If a pastor doesn't talk about Mother's Day, whoa, that's just heretical, isn't it? But not everybody shares those kinds of memories. Some people do not have good memories of their mothers. Some women cannot have children. Some women have experienced the death of children. There's a great mixture of emotions. But one thing every mother has in common, at least good mothers, is the welfare of their kids. There are many mothers in our world looking for help and looking for hope to raise their children. So I want to talk about some things today and how we as a community of faith can still be in that rescue mission. The psalmist said, God sets the lonely in families. What does that look like today? What does it look like to be a family for children? If you have children in your home, if you're raising children, some of these things might have very practical personal application, but my aim is wider. It's to talk about us as a family, adopting and rescuing. So one of the things it looks like to rescue children today is to show favoritism. Show favoritism. That probably rubs you wrong a little bit, I'm sure. Everything about our world says you don't do that. Everybody should be treated equally and fairly. But I'm not talking about leaving people out. I'm talking about helping every child know that that child is favored. Are you familiar with the Pygmalion effect? Classic experiment demonstrating this phenomenon was done in 1968 in a California elementary school. At the start of the school year, students were administered an IQ test. And then the administrators of the test gathered the teachers and gave each of the teacher a select number of names of students in their classrooms. They were told that those students had scored on the test such that they proved to be, quote, spurters, that they're going to really spurt in their intellectual growth and knowledge. They showed special ability to excel. Now, that was not true. The names given to the teachers were just randomly picked. They had nothing to do with their test scores. At the end of the school year, the test was administered again. Which students do you think improved the most? The ones the teachers were given. Pygmalion effect. It means we tend to live up to the expectations that are placed on us. What does it look like as a church to practice the Pygmalion effect? To look at a child and say, I see greatness in you. Do you know how special you are? I can imagine you're going to do great things in this world. When I was 14 years old, working on my God and Country Award in Boy Scouts, I had to lead worship one morning as a part of the requirements. So I got home from church, and I heard my mother in the other room tell my father something our next-door neighbor said to her walking out the door, Mrs. Kimmel. She said to my mom, walking out the door that day, she said, you know, I believe that boy of yours is going to make a preacher one day. That's how she said it. He's going to make a preacher. Now, at 14 years old, that was a laughable idea to me, but I believe God used it to plant a seed. Unfortunately, she was not alive when I responded to a call to ministry and eventually was ordained. But I believe God used those words, the Pygmalion effect. What does it mean to show favoritism to children, to let every child know they're special, they matter, and there's greatness in them? Something else I think it means to be in the rescue mission of children today is to see ourselves as farmers, not engineers. Farmers plant, cultivate, and harvest. Engineers design. We are called to cultivate children, not design them. God has designed them. The Proverbs verse you heard a moment ago says, train up a child in the way he or she should go. When they're old, they will not depart from it. Sometimes we take that verse like engineers. If we design the child the way we want that child to be designed, one day, it's going to pay off. Have you ever known some frustrated parents of adult children whose children did not turn out the way they kept trying to design them? Because we are not the programmers. God designed them. We're called to look at that verse like farmers. Train up a child in the way he or she should go, the way God designed them. We have to pay attention. We have to observe. We have to nurture the God-giftedness in that child, because when we do the other, it's painful. I was talking to a member of our church just a couple weeks ago. He's in his 70s now, and he recalled to me with pain growing up with a father who was bound and determined to get him to play sports, particularly football. But this young boy had no aptitude for sports and football. His father literally tried to beat him into a football player. Later in life, he was surrounded by people who nurtured his God-giftedness, and they said, you know, you're artistic. You have a gift for music. And through that influence, he one day came to accept, God gave me the gift of music. That's who I am. What a beautiful thing. God gave me this. I'm not a mistake. I am not a disappointment. I can live into my design. It takes a community of faith to help us discover that. I love the story about Eric Liddell, the Scottish Olympic runner in 1924, won the gold medal. The movie Chariots of Fire is about his life. He grew up the son of missionary parents, expected to be a missionary, and he eventually was. But during that window of his life, he was a runner. And in the movie, there's a scene where his sister chastises him. Eric, God made you to be a missionary. And he said, he did, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. Isn't that a beautiful statement? When I run, I feel his pleasure. We have to help children feel God's pleasure. And the only way we can do that is when we get to know them. When we can call them by name, when we can pay attention long enough to see what their interests are, what their abilities are, what their passions are, and to pour into that and say, oh, you can make people laugh. Oh, you're a great thinker. You're a builder. We can nurture that design. Show favoritism. Cultivate, and one more very important one. Pass along intentional genetics. What is that? Most of us inherit things we have no choice in the matter. We don't choose our hair color. We don't choose our eye color. We don't choose our height or predisposed physical conditions we might have. But we can choose how we look at all of that and how well we accept it. We receive that from spiritual genetics we inherit. When Jesus was baptized, he came out of the water and he heard a voice from heaven say, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." Before Jesus did anything that could have felt like I'm earning approval, before he could ever do that, he heard God say to him, "I already approve. I am pleased with you." What does it look like for a church to do that for children? My preaching professor in seminary, Dr. Fred Craddock, tells the story about speaking at an event near the town where he grew up in East Tennessee. It was the first time his wife was with him to see the church where he grew up. So they drove out into the country one day to find this old church and let him show the church to his wife. And when they got close, it was not a Sunday, and the parking lot was packed. When they drove up, they found out why. It was no longer a church. It had been turned into a barbecue restaurant. They said, "Well, we might as well eat." So they parked, they went inside, they got a table, they're looking at the menu. And he notices this man walking from table to table, striking up conversation with total strangers. People do that down south. It's real annoying sometimes. Just start talking to total strangers. Dr. Craddock said, "Oh, I just want to eat in peace. I hope he doesn't come over here." Well, he might as well have summoned him, because that's the next table where the man came. He said, "Howdy, folks. My name's Ben Hooper. What's yours?" They introduced themselves. He said, "What do you do for a living?" Dr. Craddock said, "Well, I teach seminary students." He goes, "Oh, that means you teach preachers." "Well, yes, that's what I do. I got a great preacher story. Let me tell it to you." He said, "When I was a boy growing up, I didn't know my daddy. He was married to another woman when he had an affair with my mother. I was born, and in the community where I grew up, people had a name for boys like me, and they would use it. I was the shyest kid you ever met. I didn't want to be around anybody. And the little church where I grew up got a new preacher one time. People started talking about how good he was, so one Sunday I went to hear him, and he was amazing. I came back every Sunday, but when people sang the closing hymn, I would sneak out so I didn't have to talk to anybody. Well, one Sunday, I got so caught up in what was going on, I forgot to leave. And the hymn ended, and I turned, and there was the preacher at the back of the church talking to every person one by one. He said, I hid behind this woman, and when she got up to him, I tried to scoot around her and get out the door, and I felt this hand grab me by the back of the neck. Hold on there, boy, let me get a look at you. He pulled me back in, turned me around, and he said, whose boy are you? He said, I could have crawled through a crack in the floor. I felt the eyes of everybody staring at me. I was so embarrassed. And he wouldn't drop it. He said, whose boy are you? I think I recognize you. Oh, yeah, I can tell the family resemblance now. Son, you're a child of God. Now get out there and claim your inheritance. And he said, out the door I went. And he looked at the Craddocks that day and he said, that one statement changed my life. I like preachers. And he walked off. And Dr. Craddock said, he sat at that table and he just thought, Ben Hooper, Ben Hooper, why do I know that? Ben Hooper, twice elected governor of the state of Tennessee. You know, if you take nothing else away from today's sermon, I hope you'll take away the power of simple statements to change lives. What does it mean for us to be a modern community of faith, saying that we are going to rescue children? Now, I could end the sermon right now and be all polite, send us home for Mother's Day and say, isn't that a great thought to have? But I would be letting all of us off the hook, because this is a mission we are called to do something about. And it takes every one of us. We have ambitious goals in our church to reach young people in our community, children and youth. And every one of us will have to be involved. We've all got to be in this game together. When you walk out the door, you'll see a table for children's ministry that's set up just across the hallway. That's a place where you can go today and say, how can I help? What can I do? One of the things that you might do is to say, let me help with Vacation Bible School. We call it Summer Splash. This year's Summer Splash is Kingdom Rock. That's the name of it. It's from 9 to noon for 1 week in July. 5 mornings, Monday through Friday. Now, some of you work. You can't help. But some of you are retired. What else are you going to do, really? You're going to play golf? You're going to go out to eat somewhere? 5 mornings. Come and invest in children. Take a look at this video.
It was my grandma. My Sunday school teacher.
A youth camp counselor.
My parents.
My neighbor.
A friend at school.
My coach.
My best friend told me about Jesus.
Someone, at some time, somewhere, told you about Jesus, or showed you God's love, or modeled how to pray, or read the Bible to you, and it changed your life for eternity. Now it's your turn to be a somebody. Soon, our church will be filled with kids. Some of them need a somebody.
May be of an age where you say, well, gosh, I'm too old to be investing in kids. Let me tell you what, I would not be where I am today if it were not people my grandparents' age when I was growing up in church pouring into my life. I would not be where I am today. They literally adopted me in many, many ways. I hope you'll ask Dave or other volunteers in children's ministry, what can I do to help? Maybe it's to do hands-on work with children, and do not be put off. You will have to do a background check. That's a part of our security policies for providing safety of children. Don't be put off by that. If you don't want to work that hands-on, there are a lot of other things that we need people to do, but we've got to have help. We need help in our youth department. Go to Kevin Davis. Go to Stephanie Eft and say, how can I help you build teenagers? I want to do that. But let me close in this way. We cannot pass on what we have not first received. We cannot help children know how special they are to God if we don't have a certainty about that in our own hearts. And I believe we all, deep down, are still little boys and little girls desiring to hear a voice say to us, I'm proud of you. I love you. How important is that to know? You remember that movie, The Sixth Sense? It was about a little boy who could see dead people. The dead people would speak to him. And the whole movie, he can't tell his mother. She knows something's going on, but he can't tell her because he's afraid she's going to think he's weird. But finally, at the end of the movie, they're in a car together. They're stuck in traffic, and he's finally able to tell his mom the truth. Take a look at this scene.
Grandma says hi. She says she's sorry for taking the bumblebee pendant. She just likes it a lot.
What?
Grandma comes to visit me sometimes.
Well, that's very wrong. Grandma's gone, you know that.
I know. She wanted me to tell you.
Oh, please.
She wanted me to tell you she saw you dance. She said, when you were little, you and her had a fight right before your dance recital. You thought she didn't come to see you dance. She did. She hid in the back so you wouldn't see. She said you were like an angel. She said you came to the place where they buried her. Asked her a question. She said, the answer is every day. What did you ask?
Do I make her proud?
That scene always gets me. Do I make you proud every day? Some of us did not hear that enough from our parents. And your parents may be gone now. But I really believe that in heaven they can see life the way it was meant to be. And if they could say anything to you, they would say that. Every day you made me proud. Some of you have children and they're adults. They're not little anymore, but you know what? They still need to hear that. They still would love to hear you say to them, I want you to know I love you and I'm proud of you. Deep down, we all need that. And when we can't get it the way we would like to have it, we need to hear it from a higher voice. The voice of the one who designed us and who made us and who says to you, I'm pleased with you. I'm proud of you. I love you not because of what you do, but because of who you are. I made you that way. When we know that, we can live out of that. We can give it away. We can share it. We can let other kids know it. I was speaking at a conference some years ago, and a worship leader was there leading, and he closed the session one day with a song he wrote. It's called So Good. And Matt Brannick is here to sing it for us and with us. It's a very simple song. I think you'll catch on to it very quickly. So as Matt leads us, as you're ready, just join with him in singing this song, So Good. Let's stand.
So good, you're so good, you're so good.